Please listen carefully.
And welcome in, everyone. You're listening to the Heard It Here Sports Podcast. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. I am your host, Cooper Heard. Today, I've actually got a guest joining me for once. We're bringing in Evan Townsend, contributor over at Project Spurs, and you probably all knew him as the guru of Spurs Twitter, the most hated man on the internet in the San Antonio area. Welcome on, man. Welcome on to the podcast.
Hey, man. Appreciate you for having me. It's just funny, you know, we were just talking about doing this virtually, and, you know, we remember we both actually live in the great city of Austin, Texas. So appreciate you for taking the time. It's going to be a great show, and I'm super excited.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, super excited for our topic today. As we've got our resident Spurs guru in here, wanted to talk a little bit about the newest face of the franchise in San Antonio, the third big man to come in, and you know, we're hoping he'll reign supreme over the league like David Robinson and Tim Duncan did in years gone by. So a little bit about Wemby. I'm sure anyone listening to this dingy old podcast has heard of the young Frenchman by the name of Victor Wembanyama at this point, but Wemby is a 7'5" gentleman, estimated weight around 220 to 230 pounds, 8-foot wingspan, which is, I believe, will be the longest recorded in NBA history. Mo Bamba, I think, was maybe at the combine at least, yeah. He set the record at 7'10". So, you know, a pretty big dude. Per game last year, he really had a breakout season statistically last year. Got his averages up to 21.6 points per game, 10.4 rebounds a game, 2.4 assists, 3 blocks a game, 0.7 steals a game, as well as 2.6 turnovers. Really efficient as well, for the most part. He was, efficient on his twos. 56% on his twos, shot about 11 a game. As far as efficiency, he was an 83% free throw shooter, which is more what I was referring to.
Talk about his threes.
He was a 27.5% shooter on 5 3-point attempts a game, which, for a guy that's 7'5", you certainly have to point to that 5 3-point attempts number as a positive indicator. But I do think that is actually something worth noting, and I don't think people really talk about it. It's one of actually, I wouldn't call it a weakness of Wembanyama, because him being able to shoot, period, is kind of a miracle. But it's one of the less refined skills of his, is the shooting. Even just as a catch and shoot guy, I don't know that he's going to come into the league knocking down shots at a 40% clip by any means. A little bit more background. His mother actually coached youth basketball and was a big part of getting him into the game. Joined Nanterre 92's youth league at age 10. So he has been playing basketball for a long time, has sort of been an athlete his whole life, played soccer as well when he was young. He played in the youth system for a few years, was sort of a known commodity already by age 15. He was a standout at the U16 European tournament at that time. He was already around 7'2", so already established himself as a physically dominant figure, but, you know, really started to flash some of the skill that we saw later on, you know, sort of developing this year. Last year, he played for ASVEL, which was a team that split time in the French top league, the LNB Pro A League, as well as the Euro League. He only averaged around 17, 18 minutes a game the last year, which is a big part of why he switched over to Metz 92, a team that actually has a great story behind it. If y'all haven't read about it, you really should. But this is a team that was, and actually still is, I believe, facing bankruptcy, but managed to lure away the French national team coach, Vincent Collet, who in turn managed to lure away Victor Wembanyama to the team, which plays only in the LNB Pro A game. So Victor was able to get about 34 games in that league. Obviously, a little bit less competitive than the Euro League, and a league where he was able to, you know, have a little bit more freedom to create, work with the ball in his hands. There's a reason he got his stats up so much, and it's not just because he improved so much. He got some more looks as well. Evan, you've been watching Wemby for probably a while now, but I'm sure a little bit more close to the past couple of weeks now the Spurs have won the lottery. What are a couple of things that, maybe a couple of things that you weren't really expecting from the narrative that's been around Wemby that really stuck out when you saw him?
Well, you know, when you watch him play, obviously being so tall and so fluid and just being a walking mismatch, He pretty much just has the confidence to allow the game to come to him. And, you know, while his turnover numbers and his efficiency isn't exactly where you would like it to be, his decision-making when he gets double-teamed, how just quick he's able to make just a fluid read, whether if it's an advanced read, whether if it's a behind-the-back pass, he has all the confidence in the world, and he has a long leash with his coach. You know, obviously being the superstar, being the guy on his team, the MVP of the league, you know, he definitely makes the game look easy. He shoots down being so tall. It's like I've said in multiple occasions, it's literally a real life Nerf hoop. We'll see how big his hands are, you know, when he gets to the States. I'm pretty sure they'll get a good measurement in and have a comparison between household items and how crazy it is. But we've seen this guy walk over two sets of chairs with ease. We've seen this guy literally lay up a ball without even and slapping the glass without even jumping. Something you truly haven't seen in this age of basketball. But for him being so tall, obviously, you know, everybody kind of looks at the old interview where his management did say, oh, we'd rather not have him play center. He kind of doesn't have that type of game, even though he's so tall. He's just a tall wing. He's literally a tall movement shooting, initiating wing at 7'4". You know, like Cooper said, with the 8-foot wingspan, it's just literally insane. So, you know, Zach Collins is a great center. Charles Bassey is a great backup center. The Spurs, that is, will need to probably fixate some more depth around those guys, behind those guys. But look for Victor Wembanyama to be that last just glue of a piece of obviously the generational prospect that he is. He's literally just going to cover in everyone's mistakes, hover in his zone, probably press up on guys in different type of defensive sets, and just bring a different type of excitement that, you know, the city, the NBA hasn't seen before, or hasn't seen in a while. So yeah, that's all I got.
Feels like you missed the Dominique Barlow shout out, but other than that, I thought that was, you know, pretty solid points. But again, one thing I think really interesting point that you're making about, yeah, the game is sort of, I think when we say the game comes slow to a player, what we really mean is that they have a high rate of processing. Mm-hmm. It's more that their mind just runs quicker than, I mean, certainly someone like mine does trying to watch the game, you know, the competition around him. And I think one of the things that is really remarkable about Wemby, Victor Wembanyama, is that he doesn't need to be this skilled. He doesn't need to be this smart. He doesn't need to try this hard. He could just be 7'4" and catch the ball and dunk and be Sean Bradley on defense, and he would be perfectly fine. He would get paid $20 million a year, and he would have a successful career, and his family would be fine. I think it's certainly an indication about the type of person he is, not just as a competitor. I think a big portion of it is that he's a competitor, but also just him being, and this is going to sound like a dumb phrase, but sort of a free spirit, a little bit more of a, he's an independent thinker, right? I think Kareem has been a guy that's come up a lot as a comparison, and I really like that one, not just because Kareem was 7'2", and obviously I would consider him the original skilled big, sort of the, maybe not the original dominant big man, that probably would be Wilt, but what Kareem also had, and obviously he was at a time in the 70s, which everything he said was controversial. Obviously, if he was saying it today, people would be like, yeah, it's common sense, but he's somebody that was, there's things off the court that he did that I'm not even really capable of talking about. Like, he's a great person in a lot of ways. But on the court, or in a basketball sense, he was also just somebody that was, you know, the media considered him prickly. They considered him, frankly, kind of an asshole because he was not somebody that was always respectful to the media, especially when they asked him ridiculous questions. He was just not somebody that really put up with the norms of the day that he thought were unfair. Also, and I think a part of that, you know, this all of that kind of goes to say that he really values himself. He's somebody that is, you know, I think values his community, but also is not going to let himself be mistreated. One thing that Kareem did that was pretty impressive was he played 20 years in the NBA, and that was after playing 4 years at UCLA. So this is a, you know, I would say people generally consider him the most durable guy of all time, and he was 7'2". But I mean, again, I guess we can go ahead and hop into the Kareem comparison because, again, I do think that mindset is something that Wimby's going to carry over. I think he's somebody that again, this may be a little bit, you know, maybe I need a trigger warning for Spurs fans when I say this, but I think Wimby's going to look out for himself over the team, specifically when it comes to medical issues. I don't think he's going to allow himself to be brought back if he's not ready. I think he is going to... I guess one thing that I want to make clear is I think he's going to play as many games as he can. I think he's a competitor, and he's going to try to win games. He's going to try to win championships. That is what he's here to do. But I don't think he's going to sacrifice his career or make decisions that he thinks and his advisors think are bad long-term decisions just to help the team in the short term. I think that's something that you have to note because, again, he's just – he is an independent thinker. He is sort of his own individual. And I think that's something that Kareem kind of had in common. And frankly, it's not like Kareem really had the luxury of load management or anything like that. I think you got to say that part of what it was with Kareem is he got a little bit lucky. He's also renowned for doing stuff like yoga, sort of mental care, like meditation. So certainly things he was doing that were advanced at the time. But you played 21 years. He played 37 minutes a game, more or less, 1,500 career games. So, you know, some of that's luck, but some of that's treating yourself correctly, and some of that's being aware of your own body, right? Some of that, at the end of the day, medicine is not 100%, it's not math, right? There's some variability in medicine. There's room for second opinion, right? So a little bit off track in terms of that, but I do think that's something really interesting to note with Wimby is how strong of a personality he's going to be, how interesting I think he is in interviews, and just, you know, how interesting he is as a human being, as well as how that might relate to him lasting as a player. I guess, do you have any thoughts on, you know, a little bit more generally, just what you've seen from Wimby, him as a person, what you like and what you see about him that makes him, because he's not just special as a physical human being. This is kind of what I saw with Taco Fall. A little bit of a side note. But no, this is serious. Because Taco Fall, I was at the 2019 Summer League. And when he would get into the games, people would freak out. Because they saw this 6-foot guy that looks goofy and he's really tall. And I get it to some extent. But also, like, Taco Fall is like a chemical engineer at UCF. He's like a brilliant guy. I don't know. Sometimes I think that... especially the real tall guys, we refer to them as giants and stuff like that. And I don't know, they're still human beings. That was a little bit off track, but anyways, tell me a little bit about what you like about Wimby and what you've seen for him.
You know, he carries himself, you know, fairly well. We don't really know too much in terms of how his PR development team kind of mentors him and just gives him advice to say the right things. But, you know, one thing I do remember him saying was that he's ready to win, so be ready. He said that on the lottery night. And, you know, in terms of comparing him to Kareem and just, you know, handling pressure, his longevity, and in hopes of how he can be utilized in his career, that's a high bar. Kareem not only is one of the more winning athletes really of all time, not even just in the NBA, and NCAA, high school. This guy was always win. All he does is win. Wembanyama is pretty much in the same boat as for now, but to be as dominant as that, it's got to be pretty tough. He can definitely block the same amount of shots. Can definitely get to the line. Can definitely have, you would want to hope he would have the same or around the same usage rate. But we'll see how the modern game kind of, especially the NBA with more spacing, he can't be camping out in the paint. He's used to playing only one game a week over in France. He's going to be playing multiple a week. It's going to be so crazy. I know this is off topic, but you remember when Coach Pop benched the big three, and I think it was the Heat, Miami Heat, Spurs era. It was 2013, 2014, and he had benched all those guys, and everyone was so mad. Do you remember that? Man, this is crazy, man. So I wasn't even working, obviously, doing media for the Spurs at this time. But people were so mad that Coach Pop benched. And he gave everyone a good amount of time to sell their tickets or to get prepared that these guys weren't going to suit up. But I think they got fined because of it. And
I do remember this.
And, yeah, no, like, I can't imagine just, especially if he does it in, like, a big city. Imagine 3 hours before the game, Victor Wim is not playing. Back spasms. Yeah, that's people are gonna be so mad. I don't blame them truly, but yeah, that's gonna be interesting for sure. I don't know, man. That's really all I have in terms of, you know, what we've seen so far. You know, his on-ball creativity, his on-ball bag, as the kids will say, his confidence. I really do not think he's going to be taking movement, running threes, floating threes to the side. As he can hit them, you know, he can hit them, and no one's going to block that. In the Spurs system, I think Coach Pop would, you know, probably pull his hair out. But we'll see how it plays out. It's just crazy to think that literally, less than a month, man, he could be suiting up in Sacramento. We'll see. I'm trying to save my money. Trying to go, honestly. That'd be fun. I don't think he's going to play, but we have hopes. We have hopes.
Yeah, he might still be playing in the playoffs, right? It'd be over by then.
The playoffs.
Oh, he might be playing during the draft.
The playoffs. The last game is on the 20th, and the draft's on the 22nd. Mm-hmm. That's if they get to a game five. And July 3rd is the first game in Sacramento, the scrimmages. And the league already has it set up. They have us playing the Hornets the first game, and then 2 days later playing the Lakers. So, yeah, stars will be in the building, and Victor will be there for sure. He will definitely be suiting up. He will. Yeah, they're gonna make him do all his media stuff. It's gonna be a crazy experience. But I just can't wait. But, so
I know it's crazy to say for a summer league game, and they never live up to the hype that the names seem like they should.
Mm-hmm.
But that first game, Spurs versus Hornets, if the teams whatever. Scoot versus Wimby, though. I mean, you know, Scoot has a chip on his shoulder. I love Scoot Henderson. Mm-hmm. I think. I sort of think Wimby is actually maybe a little bit more of a project. He's a little bit less refined in his game, whereas Scoot, you know, he's not 7'5". He'll never reach. He doesn't have the freaky outcomes that Wembanyama has. But he's just solid, man. He's just good at what he's good at. He's good at being a point guard. Mm-hmm. He checks every box. So, and I think he's going to come in excited to play Wimby again. So I'm really excited for that. But I'll transition now because one of the things I sort of wanted to talk about was a few comparisons to Wimby that I had come up with. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of easy because you just look at the guys that are 7'3 or taller, and there's not a ton of them. Even Kareem, who I already mentioned, was 7'2". But there were a couple of guys that really stood out to me that sort of had really impressive skills that I think Wembanyama either flashes, or maybe already has, or maybe it's something that he just needs to try to build into his game long term. Mm-hmm. And we were sort of talking about the offensive, you know, as the kids say, the bag that Wembanyama may be developing. No, you're good. You're good. I love saying as the kids say, and then saying something I say.
I'm not the only one. Okay,
No. You're totally fine. But as I was talking about with his offensive game, you know, it's a different game. You know, some of the guys I'm talking about here are the 80s, the 90s, different game for sure. You go back and you watch the YouTube clips, it looks like they're, you know, moving completely differently. It's the footage quality. It's almost hard to just compare eras just because of the way that the footage looks. But one of the guys that caught my eye on the list who I'd sort of heard of and I knew about, Rick Smits. Rick Smits was the second overall pick to the Pacers back in 1988. He was actually taken the year after Reggie Miller. And they played together for the next, I believe, 12 years. It was Smits' entire career. So they played together for 12 years. Smits retired at age 33. He came
at age 33?
Rick Smits.
Wow.
Yeah. So Rick Smits played 12 years. He came into the league after 4 years of college. He was 33 when he retired. And one of the most impressive things with him, actually, and it's interesting because he is another one of these rather durable big men, ended up playing 867 career games. Although one important note, and I'll note this with Sean Bradley too, 26.6 minutes per game. But Rick Smits, he was remarkably durable throughout his career until the later years. But even then, he made an all-star team, his one all-star team, as either a 30 or a 31-year-old. It took him 8 or 9 years.
Yeah,
so he sort of peaked in his last few years. It was really interesting, you know.
It was the team success by then, probably, you would think.
So the team was incredibly successful. I'm actually going to pause this so I can pull up stats real quick, because I think you'd find them fascinating. Okay, so we've got Rick Smits' basketball reference page pulled up. He made an All-Star team at age 31, so his third to last season. It took him 9 years in the league. Was scoring around 18 points per game, had a usage up around 28-29%. Really impressive. But real quick, I wanted to mention this one, I would call it a nugget, I guess, a little tidbit of information. The Pacers had an incredible run of, I would call it crushing defeats. And folks maybe out there already know this. I guess I just didn't really realize this was in such consecutive order. But in 93-94, the Pacers made the Eastern Conference Finals, lost in 7 games to the New York Knicks. The next year, they made the Eastern Conference Finals and lost in 7 games to the Orlando Magic. The next year, they lost in the first round, 2-3, when it was a best-of-five series, I hope, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah. I mean, yeah, 2-3, so... Mm-hmm. That's another closeout game. The next year, they didn't make the playoffs. The next year, they lost to the Eastern Conference Finals in 7 games to the Chicago Bulls. Damn. And then the next year, they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals in 6 games to the New York Knicks. And then the next year, they finally made the finals.
Which year was the Reggie Miller choke thing?
Oh.
Which year was that? Sorry, I never got a date back. I'm sorry.
This is not going to take too long. I think Reggie Miller choke is going to pop up very quickly. History on this day, June 1st, 1994. Yeah, that was one of those 7-game losses. Mm-hmm. Oof, that's too bad. Well, it's not like the Knicks got it.
That was one of my favorite ESPN documentaries. I feel like that's a classic one. Obviously, The Last Dance.
The Malice in the Palace one's pretty great.
Dude, oh, the OJ one. Yeah,
the OJ
of course.
One
is
the original one.
Holy crap.
I forgot that one even came out. Have you heard of this? Apparently, okay, so I was at a wedding a couple weeks ago, and I just met this dude who was fiancé with one of the bridesmaids, which my girlfriend was one of the bridesmaids, and I didn't know anyone else either, which is how you become friends with a guy at a wedding, apparently. But he was telling me, apparently there's this 30 for 30 on this hockey team called the Trashers, and apparently there's this like mafia boss who bought his son a hockey team, and he's like this 17-year-old owner of a hockey team, but apparently... He was like actually kind of decent at it and did some like relatively advanced analytical stuff at the time. I think it was like 90s or something.
And they had to move that. That team isn't still there. They're right. That team.
Well, he didn't spoil it. Apparently, he got banned for some reason. I haven't seen it, so
I got. We have to watch that. That is actually
yeah.
So,
no, it's cool. On my list. Yeah, I was gonna say he had me at mafia boss hockey team, but the fact that there was some stats in there too was fun. But anyways, totally off topic. Let's get back to a little bit of Wemby talk.
That's crazy.
Again, we were sort of talking about Rick Smits. Rick Smits was a really interesting guy. Again, I sort of gave his background. He grew up in the Netherlands, so one of the things I found pretty remarkable is he was not a basketball player at a young age, didn't even have any D1 offers. He sort of was seeking out a D1 opportunity. He had one offer from a D2 school and eventually was able to join Marist College. Marist had just become a D1 school, so... he was a guy that I would say the development track is maybe something that you would check with Wemby. And again, he was a pretty prolific scorer. Rick Smits was maybe 7'4". I've seen his listed weight at like 250. And you definitely see him use his weight a little bit. He's definitely, I would consider him a skilled post player. He was definitely not somebody that was like Ralph Sampson doing dribble moves or running the fast break. But he had a really nice turnaround jump shot from like 8 feet on the baseline. He liked shooting his little post hook. He was just, he was generally able to create space for himself because he's really tall and could just kind of, you know, he could get shots off anywhere within 15 feet, really. He was not necessarily a guy that was going to, again, dribble into the paint, but he would fake you and take a step in. He was a guy that, I guess the thing I was most impressed with was his touch and his finishing. And that's something that I think we've definitely seen from Wembanyama. You know, obviously everybody likes to put every dunk on a highlight reel. That's what's fun. That's what sells, I guess. But really what's been fun to watch with Wemby is some of the self-created finishes he's had and some of the assisted finishes he's had, especially, you know, when he's sort of passed through in the paint, he can finish. His mid-range jumpers are a little more self-created. Guys don't really just take catch-and-shoot jumpers these days, which most of these – other big men, like, they would just catch from 10 and pull up. But Wimby's got, you know, maybe a little bit more of a floater game. In general, he's just a guy that if he's got the ball above his head, he can get it into the basket. So like you said earlier, he kind of just throws it down. Because, again, an important thing to note is Ray Smith's wingspan was probably like 7'5". So Wimby's arms are probably, you know, a good 3-4 inches longer per arm. It's not really how you classify wingspan as per arm. But anyways, it's different angles that he gets to. But I think what's going to be really interesting with Wimby is, you know what? You know who they've got in that building? I don't know if he's still on the bench, but Tim Duncan. Good at bank shots. You know what Wimby could probably do is find some room on the glass. That's what I'm thinking.
You know, I mentioned earlier that Wembanyama technically shoots down when he jumps. Around the rim, I wish I had the numbers. I know someone I can find that tweeted it a good while ago. He shoots very efficient around the rim, and you know, in terms of being a play finisher in the Spurs system, like I said earlier, it's dribble handoffs, different variations of pick and rolls, just a great misdirection, and then there's going to be someone wide open more than likely in one of the corners. As long as they can lure in one of their opposing wing defenders. Now, in terms of what Wembanyama can, what the finishing looks like, and in terms of, you know, like his confidence and his creativity, he's no way, no shape, or form going to finish like a Scoot, like an Amen, even like a Cam Whitmore. He's honestly not going to dunk that much. It's not just his energy per se. He's not going to be trying to save his body and flop all around the floor like a Joel Embiid, but it's more the lines of just going for the best available finish. He's not worried about, and it's coming from someone who just put back his own dunk from a 3-point attempt. He's not necessarily worried about the flashiest finish. Okay, he's really worried about what his body can actually do and what he has energy for. You know, I hate utilizing this term to brag about guys, because we truly do not know how high of a basketball IQ people have, or prospects have, or how well of a feel of the game they have. But in terms of just his confidence and knowing what he can and can't do, we're going to see finishes up and around, behind the backboard. We're going to see Dr. J-esque moves. We're going to see a man that can palm a basketball with three fingers, dilly-dally and fool around with grown men, and it's going to be fun to watch. But you know, I'll end it there in terms of comparisons. You know, you have a great list of guys we went over in terms of like how they can be, like how the shades of their game can be compared to Wimby. But Wembanyama is going to have, I'll say this, I don't think Wembanyama is going to Eurostep like a Rick Smits or a Ralph Sampson to finish at the rim, just to fillet from, honestly, the free throw line. I've seen some crazy circus shot type of finishes when he gets fouled that just rim out. That would be the number one highlight for years and years to come if they just fell. So yeah, that's all I got in terms of for finishing. But
yeah, no, I agree. I think he's, again, like I was saying, everyone focuses on the dunks and the alley-oops, which are impressive. And especially, you know, the alley-oops, they just kind of catches and places in. Those are cool. I'm not going to lie. But I think he is. I agree. I think he's going to have some really impressive touch shots. And I don't think I mentioned earlier, but I'm actually from Spartanburg, South Carolina, which is where Zion played his high school ball.
That's right. You didn't mention that before.
Yeah. So I actually got to see him a couple of times when he was in high school. And one of the things that I went and saw him with my dad a couple of times. He always likes to talk sports, and he thinks he's an analyst just like I do. So
he's going to listen to this, you know.
Yeah, he's not going to get 29 minutes. I'm pretty confident. He might go 5-10 minutes. He's got better things to do.
Oh my god, it's like my dad. Oh my god, that's so funny. I'm sorry. Sorry, I know I blew people's ears off.
No, you're good. You're good. I completely lost my train of thought, though. What was it? Zion. So the thing with Zion that, again, everybody, and I'm not going to lie, the dunks were incredible. If y'all go, I remember that one of his, and maybe it's still like his top highlight tape from his high school days, the first dunk, at least back in the day, was against my high school, Dorman High School. We had, and I went and saw this team, so we had two kids that were like 6'8". One of them ended up, There was like one 6'8" kid who didn't really go anywhere, and there was a 6'10" kid who went to Clemson, and PJ Hall.
Mm-hmm.
He was at the combine actually. He'll have a cup of tea in the NBA. He's a good shooter and he's tall. But anyways, our other center, who is, again, he's like this 6'8", just big body. It's South Carolina high school basketball, so we don't have a ton of 6'8" guys. Mm-hmm. Zion just went in first play of the game, kind of grabbed the ball on the left block, kind of turned around and just jumped up and placed the ball over this dude's head. Man, I've never heard a basketball stadium get that crazy before. I mean, it was insane. I bet it's still the first video that pops up. No, I just look up, Zion dunks on goofy white guy, and you'll probably find it.
Because
there were a lot of those, to be fair, at Spartanburg Day School. But anyways, one of the things that really impresses me with Wimby is, again, or one of the things that really impressed me with Zion was that even though he threw down these crazy dunks, and again, he was playing private school league in South Carolina, he could dunk on anybody. He had no need to try to do skill finishes, or even, you know, he would take jump shots sometimes. But he did that because he knew that that's what he would have to do in the NBA, and he knew that that's what he had to do to get better. And I think Wembanyama is similar, that the reason he left Asvel, even though he would have been the number one pick, even if he played 0 minutes this entire season, is because he wanted to go develop his game. He wanted to increase his skill level. He wanted to do things that are going to help him at the eventual, not just in the NBA, but in the NBA playoffs and in the NBA finals, because he knows what his long-term goals are. And it's not about, you know, it's not even about the French title, right? I think he cares about this a lot. And right now he's not going to be going and doing goofy moves to just because. But again, he knows what his end goal is. And I think I just always find it impressive when guys, you know, some of the stuff like the step back threes and the like turnaround fadeaway, sometimes I'm like, all right, you know, we don't need all of that. But again, part of it is that you want to work on those skills so that when you play in the finals and you don't shoot that shot for the entire season, but you need it with 15 seconds left in the game, you can pull it out, you know? Mm-hmm. That's what it's for. So I agree. I think his finishing game is really impressive, and sort of his touch all around, which I would say even leads into just coordination, which I think just general coordination is something that people don't really talk about. Or they don't say that specific word, but I think that is sort of the underlying thing that people are talking about, like fluidity, mobility, flexibility. I think it's a huge part of your jump shot, obviously. It's a huge part of how you can dribble and handle the ball. It's a big part of how quickly you can recover your dribble and actually do something with it. I think coordination is just a very important underlying skill that is, you know, outside of your physical dimensions and your strength and speed. Hand-eye coordination or just general coordination is probably the most important athletic aspect, specifically in basketball, but even, you know, you're talking about playing wide receiver, you're playing soccer, any of those sort of sports. And that's something that a lot of these big, goofy guys that I was talking about, I keep saying goofy now, but, you know, Rick Smits and Sean Bradley were playing against guys like Luke Longley, right, and Greg Ostertag. There's no Greg Ostertags playing in today's NBA, right?
I've never even heard that name before.
Oh, he was on the Jazz. You got to look him up sometime.
He's Ostertag?
Ostertag, yeah. I used to play with him on 2K sometimes. We thought his name was funny. He was on the Stockton Malone Jazz team.
Okay,
no, Jazz fans sense. Are going to be furious.
It makes sense now. I remember playing against that. Yeah.
I think you can get a pass on.
Just because I'm 26. I'm 26.
Yeah, I'm 26. You're not getting that pass
high five.
Today.
Look at that. High five.
All right. But anyways, Wimby's just not going to be playing against the beasts like that, right? It's a different era. It's a different era, right? Anyways, I don't totally remember what I was talking about there. I think I was trying to transition to something regarding his sort of coordination. Sorry. So those are big goofy guys that they weren't coordinated. It's the Shaq era, right? Mm-hmm. You needed bodies that could go in there and foul Shaq. Mm-hmm. You needed three guys in the finals because you needed 15 to 16 fouls on them in a game. So you don't have those anymore.
Time out. You know what's crazy?
Yeah.
No. You know what's crazy?
Yeah.
Just how people had to have a defensive set for Shaq. The same thing was said for Dwight freaking Howard. And Shaq was traded to the Cavs or went over to the Cavs solely for that reason.
I do remember that.
That's
a good point.
And, like, it obviously kind of you know, deteriorate after that. Not just Dwight Howard's career, but just the type of game. Enter Steph Curry after a few years of just LeBron dominance. And LeBron stoppers, shout out DeMar Carroll, former Spur for like 3 years.
Yes. It's funny, I would say you shout out P.J. Tucker, but he still plays. Remember when the Raptors traded for him? They got him from the Suns because they were like, this is our LeBron stopper. It's like, I don't think this is going to do it. No, I'm sorry.
That's funny. That was an era. That was a whole era. Yeah. That's so funny.
So it's funny because I thought you were going to maybe mention the possibility of Wimby stoppers. Because I'm fascinated. Well, it's a serious thing. I'm fascinated. Yeah, this is a topic for another time. But how are teams going to try to guard Wimby? Because again, I'm going to go back to the Zion well. But I watched most of Zion's games. It's been really tough to try to follow him because of the injury stuff. And you know, it kind of is what it is at this point. Congrats to him.
Oh man,
he seems to be having a child. I don't know what their status is, so I don't want to say anything. But
no. I found out some crazy stuff about that.
All right, we're gonna take that offline. congrats, big man.
I'm sorry.
But anyway. So I was gonna talk about the idea of like a Wimby stopper, right? I mean, I guess don't get me wrong. There's no way to stop Wimby, but sort of. I guess what Zion had was. Or what worked best with Zion was a combination of two defenders, right? You got to have the big guy to try to stop him, the bruiser, and then you've got the guy hanging behind to block his shot. It's the Celtics strategy from the Heat series, right? You got Rob Williams in there roaming in the paint. You got Al Horford defending Jimmy up front. That's how you get two guys. That's how you actually defend some of that you just can't defend one-on-one. Wimby's a little bit different though, because obviously the roamer is going to have a lot more time getting up there to block his shot. I also just wonder, you know, I'm sure Wimby's going to do some facing up from the top of the arc, but you know, trying to double in the paint is a lot different than trying to double on the perimeter or, you know, blitz a pick and roll or whatever you want to do. So I am curious maybe what you would think would be the best strategy. Or maybe less so the strategy, but what the personnel you would want to try to go out there and defend Wembanyama with. Because you're not going to block his shot. Like, what do you do to make his shots more difficult?
Yeah, no, we were just talking about this offline. We were just, you know, the Leonard Miller archetype, even if you're 6'11", super athletic, agile for your size, for your frame, you're going to be just a couple inches short. You know, when it comes down to contending the shot, when it comes down to just being there, just to even have the space, whether it's a step back, any type of misdirection, a floater, he's just too long. And you talk about like a Evan Mobley, a Jared Jackson Jr., these mobile 7-foot fringe guys that can definitely, you know, go on the perimeter and guard multiple positions. But man, you would need like the I promise I'm not cheating on your notes, but you would need like the mobility of a Kristaps Porzingis as at his frame, with his size, with the best of his defense, all the gas in the world in his engine, just to have some type of contention with Wimby. That's what you would really need. I honestly can't think if you're in a short corner, he's backing you in the post. Two hard dribbles, fade away. I don't think anyone's stopping that besides a help defender. We were missing the good help side defenders, like from Giannis to Brook Lopez, even like a Jared Allen to Evan Mobley. Man, I really hate talking about what could work against my team, but like there could be some defensive sets with like a Clint Capella, who is a great shot blocker. Next to, I don't know if they play Onyeka with the Clint Capella. They really should if they don't, but that could definitely slow him down to a T. But defensive sets, him being trapped, he's not the, I've said this earlier, I think I said he's fair in getting out of double teams. I'll stick with that. He's fair. He's definitely had moments where he gets caught this in midair and he has to throw with his freaking wacky inflatable two-man arms. You have to just make that read, and it's just like in your head it goes off so quick, but having this the time to get there, he gives himself an extra half second. So shout out to him for that. Shout out to his training team. We haven't talked about that. I was really trying to get in touch with those guys. His training team is super on point with anything and everything they do, whether if it's Lee's working out his toes, anything from his mobility to like making sure his he's just ready to go. That's the best way to put it. And from when he sits down on the court off on the bench, he has a guy massaging his arms or with the massage gun. And post game, pre game, he's preparing. He's always doing the extra steps. So yeah.
Yeah, I know everyone at this point's heard the story of him, his like pregame routine where he's like flexing his fingers and toes. And absolutely. I mean, like I think I sort of mentioned earlier, I think he's got a really good support system around him, and he's had people around him that have known from an early age. Number one, you have a good chance to be a professional athlete. And number two, you're going to need to do a lot of work to maintain your body. It's just, that's part of being that large. It's just something you're going to have to maintain, you know, just like we all maintain our bodies, except his is way larger. anyways, though, the one thing I did want to call back to that you mentioned, I do think what you're saying, you know, putting length on him, obviously you're going to help on him. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest, so Wimby will make mistakes. He is not as refined as Scoot in terms of, you know, I mean, Scoot makes mistakes, don't get me wrong, but Wimby is definitely a lot more prone to mistakes, even not necessarily unforced errors, but, you know, just mental lapses, just making the wrong decision, frankly. Sometimes you have two passing lanes and you pass to the wrong person, you know? I think what you will see early on with Wembanyama is that people are going to figure out how to take his easy shots away, right? You're going to stop him from getting a really close position in the paint. You're going to make sure you keep a body on him at all times. You know, he has to stay outside of like the 8-foot radius near the rim. If he wants to take a jump shot over you, he's going to take a jump shot over you. You're not blocking that, but make sure he's taking harder shots. You don't want him taking the easy shots. But the problem is with that strategy is that Victor Wembanyama can hit hard shots. It's the reason that Kevin Durant is such a great player, right? Kevin Durant doesn't get alley-oops and 3-foot post hooks all game. He's able to make really difficult shots at a reasonably efficient rate. And I think that's going to be certainly, I think, part of Wimby's development is going to be learning how to counter defenses to get the easy shots, because you got to get the easy shots. You can't live on hard shots. But I think we're also going to see how good is he at making these hard shots. Because if you make hard shots, I mean, the defense still, if you can consistently prove that you can make hard shots, the defense can't let you keep having them.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
So, I think that Wimby, it's going to take a lot to even distract him or disturb him. But the biggest thing is going to be, yeah, apply pressure, try to make him make a lot of decisions quickly. But even then, I think he's just going to, I think the problem is this is a weird comparison, but it's like a virus, you know? Every year that we are using hand sanitizer and washing our hands and killing all these viruses, the ones that survive are the ones that are stronger, the ones that have adapted. Wimby's going to adapt, right? Every single time you figure out how to eliminate some part of his game, he's going to get back in the film room, he's going to talk to Pop or Tim Duncan or whoever is in that legendary locker room, and he's going to figure out, okay, well, how do I counter this change that they made? Because he's a basketball junkie. I mean, we said all this stuff about him having a good personality, all that stuff. He loves basketball, too, which is an important part of being a good basketball player. Anyways, want to jump into I'm pretty much going to shelf Sean Bradley. Sean Bradley is an interesting comparison, but the main thing on him is he's 7'6", had closer to like a 7-foot wingspan, so closer to comparable for Wimby. But, you know, he was just a great shot blocker that never really panned out as an offensive player. He's just, you know, didn't have quite the coordination that these other guys did. But the one guy that I think we should finish up on, because he is, I think, been pretty established as the most popular comparison. I personally think that Kareem might be a slightly better projection. But as in terms of how these two guys moved, I don't think it's unfair to say that Ralph Sampson is the best comparison point for Victor Wembanyama, because nobody on this list moves like Ralph did. I mean, you have to go back and watch some of these YouTube videos. There are literally some times where it's like you said with Victor Wembanyama, I just feel like I'm watching a big wing. I just feel like I'm watching a 7'3" guy that some dude in 2K put in as a shooting guard, because it's a, you know, that's how video games work. But in reality, it's so weird to see. He almost looks you know, he almost doesn't look as tall, and then he stops and he dunks, and you're like, oh, that took him, you know, it took him 2 inches to dunk the ball, because, you know, especially on like these jump shots, because Sampson, when I talked about firing from mid-range, he's the one that, you know, Rick Smits would shoot, but it was more of a turnaround fade. He'd shoot when he was open. Ralph Sampson would shoot anywhere inside of 18 feet. He had no hesitation, and he would be pretty far out. He would actually get more of a jump shot than most of these guys who had a little bit more of a step shot. He'd, like, tuck the feet in a little bit on the bottom of his shot. So just super interesting. I mean, he played power forward next to Hakeem, and Hakeem is obviously one of the greatest centers of all time. But, you know, Hakeem was super skilled. He's 7 foot as opposed to 7 foot three – or sorry, 7 foot four like Ralph was. So – anyways, just the ability to play power forward at 7'4" kind of indicates not just how skilled he was, but the fact that his in-game tendencies were more like Wembanyama's. You know, he's facing the basket more of the time. He was he did have nice post moves. In general, I thought it was a little bit more of like, I'm gonna try to put my back on you and then shoot a post hook or a fadeaway. He was not necessarily Hakeem, who was trying to throw a couple fakes and get inside. He preferred to just get a shot off from the outside, or he got a shot off over you. That was sort of what that was what made him great, right? Is that he could finish anything over you. Obviously, one of the greatest all time what if candidates. One thing that I don't think I really knew until I researched this, Ralph Sampson and Hakeem made the 1986 finals, which was 3 or 4 years into Ralph's career, only a couple years into Hakeem's career. The next season, so 86-87, Ralph had his first major injury. I believe it was a knee injury. And the next season at the trade deadline, he was traded to the Golden State Warriors. So he played – the Rockets gave him approximately 18 months after making the finals before they shipped him off to the Bay, which, you know, I think if you look back at his career stats, he never played over 18 minutes a game after that. It's hard to say from a rational business perspective that it was a wrong move, but pretty hard to imagine, right? I think we talk about today sometimes, like, these coaching firings. It's like, oh, we have no patience anymore. They traded Ralph Sampson, who was one of the greatest prospects in sports history. I mean, you go back and you look at some of these articles, the amount of hype that he had was – it was insane. Mm-hmm. To just ship him off after 18 months, mm-hmm. I mean, anyways, that's a little bit of a tangent, but that really caught me off guard. But the thing with Ralph that I think nobody else on this list did – again, he moved so well, but the coordination level was higher than any of these guys. He was the one that you would watch run the fast break – and it's just like, oh, yeah, he's just a winger on the fast break. He'd take it in, he'd finish. One thing that I noticed, a specific note to show that I actually watched his film for at least a few minutes, was that he would jump off of 1 foot more often than I would expect a guy that's 7'4" to do. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a wing thing because you're sort of getting into traffic, slashing through when you'll go off 1 foot. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for him, it's easier to get to the rim. Even off 1 foot, he still has to jump very little. But that's certainly something that you would think Wembanyama can probably do. Again, you were saying earlier about he's going to do these Euro steps in the paint and just cover the entire paint. But that's something that Ralph Sampson did as well. I don't know if you had any thoughts about Ralph personally, and, you know, any thoughts about what his game looked like. But, you know, especially the Wimby sort of the skill level outside of just here's how I can score, here's how I can get in the paint. But what do you do? Bring the ball up the floor, you know? How do you help the offense flow and hum and help the players around you be successful?
Well, I got to be very careful about words because, you know, Rockets Twitter is just so spicy right now, even to this day, with anything you mentioned about Victor. But, you know, the film that I have seen about – with the the film that I have seen from Ralph, basically he would actually, in a sense, hustle 10 times more than what you would ever see from Victor. He would not be afraid to put those ball on the line. The types of shots, the types of hustles, plays, pretty much never throwing himself out of the game and never making sure or always assuring that he's always in position for his teams to succeed. So whether it be matchups, this is some – I have an old uncle who is a huge, huge Houston Rockets fan, has all the old Rockets gear and Navy, and he would tell me, like, they had a lot of not just matchup issues, but just with rotations when they were actually trying to compete. And, you know, he would buy into his role. He'd be cool with playing 25 minutes a night. He'd be cool with playing 35 minutes per night. Or, you know, he wouldn't really rack up any DNPs. But if you're in foul trouble and, you know, the team is going small, you really can't do anything. So if Victor has the same mindset in terms of, like, where he would want to see his team succeed, knowing how much he wants to win and his unselfishness, game-winning plays, that's pretty something that people want to talk about. I do see that, but Victor needs to start basically, I don't want to say, needs to start caring more in terms of, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like being...
He's got to fix his habits.
Thank you.
He's got to work on his habits.
Thank you. Like literally his sloppy habits of just moseying the ball off the floor, super slow, knowing that his coach is not going to pull him. It's so funny when players think they can check themselves back into games without their coach's authority. You know, I don't think it's going to fly in San Antonio, but you know, I truly do hope and obviously wish for the best for Victor, but he can obviously, you know, watch some rough film, maybe learn a few things. So just hustle wise, it's definitely a different game, different era, but learn how to fall, learning how to take care of your body. He has a team like we discussed earlier that's on staff for anything and everything. He's ready for anything, that a shin splint, a fingernail, he's someone's gonna be ready to take care of it. So yeah,
you know what, it's because it's interesting. I think you're 100% right. When you watch that Ralph film and some of this, these guys, they just didn't really have, again, they didn't have the luxury of load management, and I'm generally gonna lean towards rest and be prepared so that when you're playing, you can play your best. But you did mention, or one of the things, you know, with Ralph Sampson going so hard, and he obviously got unlucky as well with injuries, but part of the throwing your body around at that height is sometimes you're going to be a little bit more reckless, sometimes you're a little bit more liable for injury. But I think what you're saying with the Spurs staff, and I mean, let's be honest, the Spurs are not, they're not dumb. They understand that this guy is the face of their franchise for the next, hopefully, decade and a half, right? This is not about one year, one game, one season, whatever. They're gonna try to work with him. I think this is, again, I'm trying not to throw around trigger words for the Spurs fans, but probably a little bit more of a partnership in terms of his health, in terms of, you know, Wimby has been working with people for several years at this point, right? I think he's going to be somebody that kind of knows how to feel his body and knows when things are wrong. So I definitely am really optimistic. And again, some of these guys I sort of mentioned, obviously Ralph Sampson dealt with injuries, but he did play until he was 26, which since we just mentioned we're both 26, that doesn't really make me feel good. I'm sure it doesn't make you feel great. But funny. Still, he did, you know, he was at UVA, or he was at Virginia for 4 years. He had 4 or 5 years in the NBA. He made an NBA Finals. And then these other guys, Rick Smits played for 13 years, 4 years of college. Sean Bradley, I think, played for 12 or so years. He actually had 2 years overseas as a missionary, so just 1 year of college. But he wasn't 20, he was 21 when he entered the league. Porzingis is actually the other guy on this list. He's actually the one that dealt the most with injuries. He was 22 when he tore his ACL, but... Mm-hmm. The longevity is going to be a huge part of this. You know, we mentioned Kareem earlier. I think Tim Duncan actually is another guy you have right there that he played a lot of years. You know, off the top of your head, how many you played? I think he played probably
15 plus.
Yeah. He's drafted in like 97, mm-hmm. I think. So, I think that it's going to be a huge priority is longevity, but you know, we've talked about some incredible big men on this list. You know, Ralph Sampson, Kareem Olajuwon, Rick Smits, just really the greats of the game. You didn't even crack a smile when I said Rick Smits, one of the greats of the game. You were just going to let me say that?
I was waiting.
You're
going
to let
in.
Me say that? Yeah.
I was waiting to chime in. Okay, good. No. I was waiting to chime in. Say respect, Greg Ostertag, someone I learned today.
Yes.
I was waiting for you to say the name, yeah. But no.
On the Rick Smits thing, I was looking earlier today. There's a YouTube video of him that says the guy that destroyed Shaq every time, which I was like, okay, that's funny. But I also watched a video. it might have just been a highlight video that had a couple minutes because they played the Magic in the finals. That was one of the 7-game losses in the Eastern Conference. But he gave Shaq buckets, dude. Mm-hmm. He gave Shaq buckets. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's the thing with Smith, he was 7'4". He actually used his body really well in terms of his strength. He was one that – another guy that – Sean Bradley was kind of gangly and uncoordinated. Rick Smith moves pretty well. I'm a big Rick Smith fan apparently now. I'm all about him, but –
I'm for it. You over here just discrediting him. Like, call him one of the biggest men of them.
Shaq Destroyer. Shaq Destroyer. Yeah, Shaq's been silent since this podcast came out.
That's
all right, we're waiting on your response, Shaquille. Anyways.
You're trying to get hired, man, from all these memories. You sure you want to say
That's true. Shaq, I love your work. Big Shazam fan. Is it Shazam or Kazam? Kazam?
I have no idea.
The one that was not good. Anyways, it's been a pleasure, man. Evan, this has been a lot of fun. I think we can probably wrap it. I try not to go over an hour.
That was so funny.
I don't need to waste that much more of everyone else's time. But anyways, this has been a lot of fun. Yeah.
This was good. Coming to you live. Do we tell people where we're coming from?
Undisclosed location in Texas. Texas?
This is Central Texas.
Yeah.
I said it earlier, but they're gonna figure it out.
Yeah.
But no, it was. I appreciate Cooper for bringing me on. We talked a lot about the comparisons, and it's gonna be a great showcase, and hopefully we see him during the summer, an NBA competition. I know he's probably gonna play for Team France for a bit in the early fall. So yeah, it's gonna be exciting.
Absolutely. Real quick, what's your Twitter handle?
Evan Townsend _. It's the only place where I talk basketball. If you want to follow me, hey, we keep it real over here. That's the best way I say it. Lillian Spurs Twitter, a lot of narratives get pushed. That just completely falls. And I don't want to say I'm like the mediator, but man, it drives me crazy to see some false stuff. So I'll make sure to follow you back. And we host spaces, me and my co-host Ben, about every week or so. And yeah, just get ready for the draft in about 15, 16 days. It's crazy. Yeah.
I heard the spaces are going like Survivor style. People are getting like voted off at this point. Is that
if people have some disrespectful things to say, not even to me, but just about the players, I give them a shot clock. Yeah, I give them a time to pretty much amend themselves just so they don't.
Who's the one guy? You know who I'm talking about.
I don't.
Is it Khan?
Don't say his name.
No. I'm saying I love him. I've been in a couple of his cases. That dude is good.
I was about to say I thought you were talking, but no. He's funny. Khan is funny.
I will only say names of people when I'm saying good things. Yeah.
I'm sorry about me speaking to the mic. That loud,
it's
but
good.
No,
we're 57 minutes and no one's listening.
I truly
I'm just kidding.
I truly do believe that Kwan is one of the more greater follows on Twitter. But even that, we be going back and forth sometimes. So shout out to him. I know he's probably gonna listen to this. Now I'm probably gonna send it to him. But he's a good guy. We're probably gonna go to a Spurs game sometime soon. So yeah.
All right, man. It's a pleasure.
Thanks. Likewise. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening, y'all. Tune in as always. Thanks. Peace.